Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it's Glenn Eaton from The Last Dragon, and I just want to say I had a wonderful time talking with Zach and Dustin in this wonderful interview. They were great, and God bless you.
Before there was IMDb.com, there was Zach and Dustin.
Congrats! You found $2 Late Fee, the best 80s movies podcast in the world.
We revisit our favorite 80s movies.
Sometimes 90s.
And soundtracks from our youth. And then we interview our favorite people who helped make them. All in the spirit of nostalgic positivity.
Thanks for listening.
Today's interview is with Glenn Eaton, a.k.a. Johnny Yu from The Last Dragon.
The Last Dragon, if you haven't checked out last week's episode, we had an opportunity to go real deep into the movie, one of my personal favorites, with our friend Craig Sutton, who runs the Last Dragon tribute page. And today, it's all about Johnny. We decided that after rewatching The Last Dragon, there were two characters that really stood out. One, of course, younger brother Richie, rest in peace, Leo O'Brien. And the second was our boy Glenn, Johnny, who masters the art of fighting without knowing how to fight. He's the comic relief. He's the energy. He is, he's an amazing, amazing part of this movie.
He really is. And it was so cool to talk to him all these years later on how he got the role in The Last Dragon. We also brought up a few other movies that he was in that maybe he didn't want to talk about so much, which actually made for a really fun discussion. I'm not saying he didn't want to talk about it. It was more like a response like, you guys actually watched that?
Right. Glenn is very spiritual, very self-deprecating, you know, really thinks of himself as a guy who doesn't know how to act. And in retrospect, I was thinking of it that it's kind of like mastering the art of acting without knowing how to act.
Ooh, I like that.
Which, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk to him about. But I think that that's kind of how he frames things, because he does impressions, he does all sorts of mimicry, but feels not, like, from a connection standpoint, that maybe he's a little bit not, he, you know, he's finally kind of connecting to who he is as an actor now, many years later.
Yeah, and what I love about this interview too is that, you know, Glenn is very humble and, like you said, self-deprecating and very gracious too. So it was really fantastic having him on the show to talk about his career, talk about some of the things that make him tick, some of the things that make him happy, bring him joy. Speaking of bringing joy, those of you that have joined our Patreon, quick shout out to those people. Thank you so much for those of you who have signed up to our Patreon. If you are interested in being a part of our Patreon, which goes deeper into other aspects of the movies we've covered and Tales from the Video Store and monthly trivia, et cetera, go to patreon.com/$2 late fee and sign up today. That's my cheap plug.
That's a great plug. The only thing I'll add is check out the YouTube page. We got all the video interviews. So if you don't want to listen to this, but you'd like, I want to watch it. I want to watch Glenn. I want to watch him move. I want to see him do his Johnny-isms. Head on over to the YouTube page. Give a subscribe. We'll be your best friend.
Yeah, we will. Please help us get to 1,000. That would be fantastic.
That would be. We're not too far off, I must say.
No, we're really close.
think we're a stone's throw away from 1,000. So you could be the one.
You could be the one. You could be the one who becomes our 1,000th subscriber. And boy, oh boy, what are we going to do for you? We'll figure that out when we get to it.
We'll give you a firm handshake and a some applause.
And some certs. How about some certs?
Definitely, yeah, some certs would be good. I could go for some certs right now.
And I will say, too, we are in the middle of martial art madness. We've got two more episodes coming up this month. We've got 80s Kids Unite next week, followed by Territory Marks. All of them will be a tribute to martial arts in some form or fashion, so stay tuned for that. But until then, Dustin,
please enjoy our show. What if that was our catchphrase?
Please enjoy our show.
Like, we've got a bunch of catchphrases, but that's not one of them. But anyway, without further ado, here's Glenn Eaton. Enjoy.
Glenn, this is awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show and chatting with us.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
You know, Dustin is a huge fan of the movie The Last Dragon. I watched it consistently back in the day and then hadn't watched it in probably two decades and rewatched it for the show to get refamiliarized. And the first thing that came out of my mouth when you popped on screen was like, oh my gosh, I think Johnny is like the highlight of the movie for me. And that was the catalyst to get you on the show. I'm like, we got to get Glenn on the show. We got to talk about The Last Dragon. I have to gush. Oh. Tell me it was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure. And I'm always, of course, so pleased when somebody says, oh, I love the movie and your performance. And it's just, I guess for me, it was just great to be able to do a movie. You know, it was fantastic to be in New York. I love New York. And so I was more excited about going to New York, actually, because I wasn't that confident as an actor. And I hadn't learned my craft. And I had a good opportunity. And so I just didn't know. I didn't know what to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I was in New York for quite a few months before the shooting. And so by the time we did our first scene, I was doing it in front of the director and Barry, and I forgot how I did it.
Oh, no.
You know? So I was doing it, and the director would come up to me and say, try it this way, try it that way, you know? And then I couldn't get it right. And Barry came up and said, okay, Glenn, I was going, oh, this is scary. Because I could lose my job, you know?
Right.
And then what I didn't, all the stuff they were telling me, I couldn't, you know, I can't figure it out. So I said, what the fuck do I do, you know? And it just came to my mind, remember what you did in the audition. Oh, I imitated my friend. My friend at the time. See, my friend was a very extrovert. He was very friendly to everybody. I mean, just the most wonderful guy. And so I was more of a kind of an introvert, kind of shy. And so I said, okay, I wasn't doing that. So when they said, okay, try it again. So I did it and I just went, hey, see, Leroy, you know how, and I was just expressing myself like my friend, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Always teach master the art of fighting without fighting. You know, that's not me. So, and after I did it, I said, if they go, Glenn, try it this way, I go, I'm finished. Because I can't do it any better. So luckily, after I did it, they said, okay, that's it. I said, all right. So I remember that every time I shot, I was going to shoot a scene. Remember, just come alive. Just boom. You know what I mean? Bring yourself to life. Because I was very monotone. So to me, it was fake. And I would just be more like, hey, how's it going? All right, right. What's going on here?
Right.
And it had to be like, oh, that's Laura Charles. I had to put all this animation
right,
and my friend was very animated. So it helped.
That's very interesting.
As far as myself, I couldn't act.
But you obviously could act because you did get the role, you did land the part, and you did, this was your first movie, correct?
Yeah. I was a good imitator. I can imitate Rod Serling, Bruce Lee, you name it. If I see them, I can imitate. So I had that kind of imitating. I worked it a lot as a kid and made my friends laugh and that kind of thing. So I could imitate, you know? And when it was time to be myself, I didn't know what the hell to do. I didn't know who I was. So when I went on the acting route afterwards, I really liked Matt Dillon at the time because of his toughness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey, what's going on, you know? And he had this kind of really animated toughness.
Sure.
Right? But that wasn't me. But I would imitate him, and I'd get a, and I got a part on some TV show because of that. But they never shot my scene. It was in Universal Studios. But I got $950. So I was an imitator. And Bruce Lee was my greatest joy to imitate. Because he's so flashy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's how I was able to do all that kind of stuff. Because I did it anyway for fun. But again, when it came time to be myself, I was like, I don't know who the hell I am. You know? So that's why I left the business. And I went on a big, long route to try to find myself. You know? I couldn't understand, like you, people that I would meet, they were much more mature than I. They were much more settled of who they were. And then I was like, God, I was envious of my friends. I was like, you got a character.
Right.
You know? And each one of you fits, it matches, right? The whole look. I don't know what to do. I've been doing Bruce Lee, James Dean, imitating.
Right.
I said, well, I took them away. I said, I don't know who the hell I was. So I've been on that journey and I found out, you know what? I like myself. I like being myself better than imitating any of these people.
Yeah.
Because being yourself is why you came here. That's who you are. That's right. Your soul imprint. And I think a lot of people, I don't know for sure, but I think there's a lot of people that must have been influenced by parents, movie stars, friends. And it doesn't take much. All it takes is if you got long hair and then the guy across the street with long hair gets his ass kicked by a guy with short hair, that person might cut his hair the next day. Isn't that weird? You know what I mean?
Right.
He's going, God, that's embarrassing. I don't want to be like that. So it's very easy to influence or to be influenced. And I had to go through all those layers of finding out, that's not me. No, that's not me. You know?
Yeah.
And finding myself. And it's a continual process.
Well, it's a never-ending process, right? It's
never-ending.
Yeah.
Never. When we leave this body, another one. Another one.
Right.
But like Bruce Lee would say, it's all about growth. It's all about growth. So if you get in a relationship and you fall in love, and then they dump you or something, you go, God, I shouldn't have been rude like I was. I should have appreciated. And your heart's torn to shreds.
Right.
Some people take their lives. You know? And we can understand that. Because, you know, when I first fell in love, got my heart broke, I felt like it was the end of the world.
Yeah.
And then you get it broken again and again, you realize, you know what? It's a learning process. A learning process that there must be an emptiness in me, that I need somebody to feel it. You know? And if that, and it has to be this person. I'm going to be a hole in my heart the rest of my life. I said, no, I have to fulfill myself. So that's the same thing with acting, is you have to mentally, I think, as you know, mentally, as well as the lines and the physical preparations, the mentals is just about everything. How you perceive things, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you were thrown into the wild when you made Last Dragon, you're this young kid comes out to New York and you're probably feeling that same pressure that you're describing right now, you know?
I was afraid of everything, how I looked, how I acted, everything. So when I saw it, I was pleased, and at least to the point where I was, okay, thank God it was okay, right? But
it's more than okay. I'm gonna cut you off for a second there, because I've got to say, when you come on the scene and you know, obviously we want to talk about other facets of who you are and your career and whatnot, but just talking about Last Dragon, because it was your first project, you know, you're the one who stands up to show enough in the beginning of the movie, basically. And but it's such a dynamic energy that you project. And I mean that 100% sincerely, because, and I said, you know, I gushed a little bit on the episode we did with Craig Sutton, about your role, your character. It's like something about Johnny just stands out to me. I want to see more of him. I want to see a movie that is just about Johnny now. You know, I'm sure you would have, I'm sure you would love that too, but you know, sincerely, man. Like I was saying to Dustin too, I'm like, Dustin, man, I'm so glad I rewatched this film and had these fresh eyes, you know, 48 or whatever, however old, 47 I am, watching it with this.
You're older
lens.
Every time you say your age.
I'm 47. However old I am. I'll be 48 this year.
It changes every day.
It changes every it day. A little older.
Depending on how I get out of bed. Yeah, for sure. But no, man, like I sincerely, like you had a dynamic presence on screen that made you want to see more of you, of Glenn Eaton.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know what I'd love to know, Glenn? I'm just so fascinated. Like, how was Johnny written on the page? Was he written that way? Like,
No. He wasn't in the script.
Johnny wasn't in the script.
No.
Okay, let's start there.
I was going to try out for one of the Chinese guys that acts black. Hey, what's going on?
Okay. The fortune cookie guys. The song is always escaping me. Suck it to me. I suck it to you.
I was going to play, try out for one of them. And
how did you even hear about that to begin with? Like, how did you hear about that audition?
Well, I had or else I never would have had a chance. My sister was going out with Berry Gordy.
Okay.
That helps.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who he was. And she told me, and I was like, wow, that's great. And she said, great. Tell him about you, and he wants to meet you over dinner. And you can tell him about your stories. And I go, okay. So we go over dinner. And I tell him my stories. And to give you an example really quickly, this is how Johnny Yu was created. I said, yeah, when I was 14, I went to the Civic Center, and they'd have lowrider dance parties at the Civic Center. So I went there one Friday night alone, and I'm standing out in front, and there's this little lowrider, little guy, and he's pushing these big guys. Right, pushing them, and they're not doing anything. I thought, what the hell? God, if he pushes me, I'm gonna push him back, you know. So after the dance, I'm walking out. All of a sudden, somebody pushes me. So I turn around, it's that little guy. So I pushed him, and he said, "What?" And he ran in the place.
Oh no!
I said, "Ah, that'll teach him, right?"
Oh no!
I'm walking down the sidewalk and I hear these footsteps coming.
Oh no.
Three guys, right? And there's a little guy with them. That's him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I go, you know what? I can either run and look like a fool, which they'll probably get me and beat the hell out of me, or I can try to scare the hell out of them. So I started kicking the tree, the leaves. Oh, yeah! Bunt kicks. I kick high. Punching it, doing the whole Bruce Lee thing, right? Warming up. And then they all surround me like this. I looked and I went like this. All right, will it be one at a time or all together? And it was silent. And the guy said, "You know karate? I've learned a little." And he said, "Oh, we don't want any trouble, man. We just know what happened, you know?" I said, "No problem." He goes, "You take care. Have a good one." I go, "You too." And I was walking. I hear a little guy go, "Hey, man, ain't you going to do something?" And he smacks him on the head and go, "Ah, shut up, man."
Wow.
So I was like, oh. So I told Barry, he laughed. And he said, "Write a character like that. We'll put it, see if we can put it in the movie." And a week went by and I couldn't figure out a character. I couldn't figure out how to put him in there. And he said, "That's all right." He goes, I'll think of something." So he came up with it. You know, you play a student in the whole bit. So that's pretty much how the...
Wow.
It was not in the script, and it was just completely me being goofball, being a goofball.
And how old were you at this at the time?
I was 23.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. 23. I'm going to say there's a funny story. I was at a McDonald's in New York, and there was this guy walking around asking customers if they can help him. "Excuse me, can you please help me? I'm stranded from..." Everybody would ignore him. They wouldn't even look, not even bat an eye. And I thought, that is rude. I said, if he comes over here, I'm going to talk, I'm going to listen, right? So he came over to my seat. He said, "Excuse me, sir, I need help." And I was going, "Yes, sir. I'm from Uganda. I've come here. I've got money. I got $10,000 in the thing, but I can't get it out unless I have $1,000 to get this all." He was just making this whole story.
Sure.
Yeah. All I was thinking was, let me show these people what a humanitarian is looks like, right? So I'm going, "Yes, sir. What can I do to help?" And so, to cut a long story short, he ends up with two other people driving me to my bank. I withdraw $250 to give to him to help him. He wants me to get $1,000. So I go, "Okay, I got $250. Let me get some more." And it said, "I'm sorry, we cannot allow any more. You can't take any more." Right? So I was like, I was getting ticked. I was like, "This," and I looked at him, I go, "This is my money and I can't even get it out." And he's like going, "Shit, I want to give this guy $1,000, you know?" So I said, "I'm sorry, I can only give you $250. He goes, "Oh, that's okay, that's okay." And he goes, "Here we go." And he got me in the car with the two people. And he says, "Here's your $250. I will put it in the bag with our $1,000, and you can hold on to it." Meanwhile, the other guy, driver, is talking to me, and I'm going, "Oh," he switches it. So, okay, all right. So he drops me off, he gives me the bag, right?
Yeah.
All right, I'll see you guys soon. And I won't tell you what the whole deal was, but it was just about him coming back and giving me, he said, $2,000 or some junk. I get up to my room, I open it up, and it's just shredded newspaper.
Yeah.
And I was like, "Shit, that guy ripped me off, man." So I wasn't upset because of the $250. I gave it to him. I was upset because I got ripped off.
Right.
So I called Barry, and he was laughing. He said, "Glenn, look at it this way. You pay $250 for a good life lesson."
Yeah.
I go, "Okay. All right." So the next day I wake up, I go outside of my hotel. There's a man running down the street. And another man's chasing him saying, "Somebody help! He stole my wallet!" And I just turned and walked the other way.
Yeah.
And I probably would have ran and helped him. So that $250 could have saved my life.
Right. Mm. Wow.
That guy must have been thinking, "This guy's a dummy." If everybody was like him, we'd be rich.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I thought your story was going to end with a twist that it wasn't going to be a scam. And that you actually,
yeah, that you, I know.
That you made, you know, $10,000.
Let me rewrite that.
No, I thought Glenn was going to turn and say, then next thing you know, they're trying to roll me up into a rug. And
right. It could have gone any number of ways.
Yeah.
None of them great. But hey, I mean, yeah, you were lucky to just get scammed. And
I was dumb. I was dumb. I was naive. But the thing was, is that for me,
right,
I'm making somebody, so I'm okay.
Right.
To give this guy some money. I wish I could have gave him $1,000.
Right.
Because he needs it more than I do.
Yeah.
You know, even if he's ripping me off, he's working for him.
Right.
You had to work hard for that.
Right.
So it's not lazy.
Yeah. And so I thank God I had that experience with these people because I gave him $250 and that probably got him, you know, a few meals. But I've walked through, I'm sure we all have. I've walked through places very dangerous many times.
Yeah.
And it's like that guardian there says, don't fear anything. All right. Mm. You walk around like you live there. Right? But if you show fear,
right,
like this, victim. Let's get them. So knew that, you know, whenever you walk in a dangerous place, you just act like you're one of them.
Right.
Right? And most likely and hopefully they don't bother you. But
well, I wonder if did you walk through any dangerous places when you did the movie Penitentiary 3?
Every place was dangerous.
I sent Dustin a clip from the movie when Leon Isaac Kennedy is having his 7-minute fight with the little guy in his cell, and because I was looking for you, I'm like, I know you're not credited in the movie, but I want to find you in this movie because I want to talk to you about working on Penitentiary 3.
Yeah, I did that little boxing scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was with the co-star.
Yes.
And so we're doing it. And we worked it out. Well, anyways, he's supposed to throw a hook like this. And I hook this way. And I go like this. Boom! Right? Well, when we did it, he threw the hook the other way.
Ew.
So I went right into it. I was like, oh. Bam! Like this. And you can hear it echo all the way down the prison halls.
Oh.
And everybody was laughing. Man. Everybody was laughing. And I'll say again, I'm not a fighter. I'm barely an actor.
The art of fighting without knowing how to fight.
Right. But like all of us, I got a temper. And when he hit me and I heard the laughter, I almost blacked out.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys in the bleachers, these were prison. They were in prison. These are real prison people.
One of them being Danny Trejo, I think.
Yeah, they were tough guys.
Yep.
Could have killed me. But at that moment, boom, I turned around and I said, shut the fuck up. And they quiet. I said, if anybody else, you know, wants to say something, come right up here. They were quiet. So I turned around. I said, okay, let's do it again. Now, pay attention. I was fucking mad, you know?
Yeah.
So
we
did it and we got through it. And afterwards, I was just like, after I calmed down, it was all done. I was going, God, I hope none of them took that personally. God damn. You know, but, excuse me. Working on that picture was nice, working with Leon Isaac Kennedy. We spent some time together. He wanted to work on getting the moves down and stuff and the attitude. So we spent some time together. And that was nice. That was nice. But working on the picture, we were in the jail, old jail cell.
So you did shoot that at a jail?
Yeah. Wow. It was a rundown jail, not in service.
Okay.
It was full of dust. And they had a giant fan all day.
Oh.
Or else it'd get too hot.
Yeah.
So they had the big fan going. Dust was in the air all day.
Oh.
So after hours of it, I was just like, I was feeling it. You know, after about 3 or 4 days, I was feeling it. And I wasn't doing anything. I was just there for assistance. If he needed assistance in a look or a move or something. So I went up to Leon. I said, excuse me. I said, you know, you don't really need me here and you're paying me $350 a week. I can go home and just call me when you need me. You don't have to pay me. He said, oh, Glenn, what would you like to do? I don't know. He said, would you like to direct? I said, what?
What?
Would you like to direct the fight scene? Because I know the fight scene better than anybody. I said, you can do that? I said, I just talked to the director. And the director was firing people left and right. I mean, he was getting on everybody.
Wow.
Oh, man.
But I thought, oh, my God, he's probably going to yell at me for this. He comes back and Leon said, yeah, he said, it's okay. I said, fuck, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I can direct because I love to direct, man. So I was directing it for about 5 hours, 6 hours.
Wow. Right on.
And I'm not bragging, man, but I'll tell you, just like you know, you get your thing down. The director didn't work with the fighting, didn't work with it. So he was separate. So he didn't know. They were wasting, I was there for what, 3 days? They were wasting hours and money just talking. Oh, yeah. I'm just going, come on, shoot, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So when I directed, I was for whatever hours I was going, I don't even count them. I was nonstop because I knew the whole routine. I was watching the director and assistant. So I had it, and I had the fight scene down. So I was directing it nonstop for about hours. And by the time we finished it, I was just like, that was the most incredible few hours of my life. Couldn't fucking believe it. Okay, Spritz, get the background ready. Okay, you got this. How's this shot? Okay, it's a miss. Okay, about over here. Right there, it's good. Okay, mark it, you know, everything.
Yeah, so yeah.
And it's in your mind is going like this, just stimulated.
Yeah.
And so that was fun, but that's all I did there. After that, they fired me from the.
Oh no! Wow, really?
Yeah, because
You didn't choreograph that that scene with Leon Isaac Kennedy and the little guy. Okay, good.
I didn't choreograph it. He had another guy help him. He just wanted me there to, you know, because in The Last Dragon, I did the Bruce Lee kind of, oh, and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
He wanted me to give him the attitude. But through it, I had to be him with the wrestler he fought. I had to work on it with him. So we worked on it till we got it down. Boom. You know, we could do it blinding speed, the whole thing, right?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why he said, go ahead and direct it. Because
that's wild.
Move.
That's wild. Leon Isaac Kennedy is a trip. He just recently did some voice work for a movie called New York Ninja that came out a couple years ago. It was a movie that it was like a hidden film, and when it was found, there was no audio. So this small little boutique Blu-ray company called Vinegar Syndrome went in and re-recorded all the audio with Cynthia Rothrock, Don the Dragon Wilson, Leon Isaac Kennedy, Michael Berryman, whole cast of characters, but they did a premiere here in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. And you know, Leon's a trip, man. Like that guy is he looks like he's doing great.
All right.
And I saw him talking to Don Wilson. He's like, we need to work together. We need to do more projects together. So I think he's still working on stuff.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm happy for him.
Penitentiary 3 is one of those movies though, where I was like, I want to see where Glenn is in this movie just to watch the movie. And then I'm watching him going, oh my God, this is amazing. In a wild way. But you did a movie right after that called Train to Kill, which.
Which, you know, you wish every prince in the negative was burned.
Come on.
Oh,
really?
No.
Dude, come on.
Not because of the film, because of my performance.
No.
No.
You liked it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you did?
We wouldn't be bringing it up on the show.
Some montage, some montage action.
We have a That's term on our, epic. I think Dustin coined this phrase. We call it a masterpiece. And there are a few movies that fits it. Masterpiece is a good word for that movie.
It's funny in that one because the director had me go to try to learn how to have the Vietnamese accent. So I would drive over to this person who was Vietnamese. And here are you talk with your accent, a Vietnamese accent. And I would work on it.
Okay.
So the opening of the picture, when I come in, I'm doing the accent, but only to my, I'm trying to do Bruce Lee too, only to my mother, visiting mother. Okay. So I'm doing that whole thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And after a few scenes, after a few days, I'm like, you know, I'm getting tired of this because it ain't working. So I just changed my accent. I just got rid of the accent and talked normally. And so when I'm watching the picture, my friend was cracking up because he goes, my God, your character learns English quick. He's a very talented guy.
Go ahead.
No, it's the very first line of the trailer is literally an Asian boy. Like that's how, like, you're like, oh man, the 80s. Like, this is how we lead off the story. You know, it's like an Asian boy in Vietnam saved by his father. You know, like, like an Asian.
One of the billion of other little pictures. What did I say? These guys are animals. We got to fight them like animals.
Yes.
I was sick. We did that.
Oh, man.
And I didn't eat anything. I was hungry. And we were on the boat for a while. And I was seasick.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had to, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going, Jesus Christ. I don't know if I can hold it in, you know?
Oh.
So in the scene when you see them crying, you know, it's, and they're throwing the ashes or something into the water, the flowers, and they're crying. It goes to me, I'm like this. It's because I'm
so seasick.
Yeah, I'm trying to guess not.
You're trying not to throw up. Not to project the vomit. Well.
Oh, yeah. But
do you know if there's any talk of that movie is it gonna get released on Blu-ray or has anyone approached you about doing an interview for that movie other than us?
Oh my God, no, not that picture.
But people, like, people who haven't seen it, the cast alone in that film is phenomenal, you know.
I love, that's the part I loved about it. Chuck Connors.
Yeah. Ron O'Neill.
My mother is played by the lady. I remember her from TV shows in the 60s and 70s. And
Arlene. Is it Arlene DeLonca? Yeah.
And Henry Silva.
Yeah.
Henry Silva.
Marshall Teague is in it. Marshall Teague he's been on our show. The man with the $1 million jaw, Robert Czar.
Right. Czar, is it the D silent?
I think it's Czar.
Not Czar. It's not Czar.
I thought it was Czar.
I think it's
Czar. Oh, I thought you just said Czar.
Oh no, I think.
Oh, I swear you said Robert Czar, and I've never heard it that way, and I was like, oh,
Czar. Czar.
Czar. Yes.
Yeah, they were the professionals.
The fine jaw.
They were the professionals working around all of them. They were all I was green and lucky to even have. I only had that because I knew the. Because
your sister was dating who?
No, the producer. Yeah, she's dating.
That's the trend. The trend of every movie you've gotten is because your sister was dating someone.
Yeah, Grace, can you date the president I like to run for politics?
This is such a funny bit.
It was the producer liked me in The Last Dragon, so he called me and said, oh, we'd like to do a picture. Would you like to be in there? I go, sure. And a year went by. Nothing. But he called me and said, Glenn, we're still trying to get a script. We're still trying to get it going. I said, no problem, you know. And I thought, let me try writing the script. So for 3 nights, I locked myself up in the house.
Yeah.
My girlfriend stayed with her mother. And I just wrote day and night. And I finished the script in 3 days, like Stallone and Rocky. I said, wow. If he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of coffee. And I finished it. So they came and I read it to them. And they were like, they didn't get it from Adam. They were like, don't you like, isn't it neat? It was called The Bloody Fists of Daryl. And it was a comedy martial art film.
Okay.
Almost a kung fu spoof. Ridiculous. And I thought, They said, "What were you smoking, man? Because it was ridiculous." So I go, "Shit, I don't know." Well, the next day, the producer called me and he said, "Glenn," he goes, "I'm going to go see the Money People. Only problem is, I don't have a script. So I just called to let you know I'm looking for a script." I said, "I just finished a script." And he said, "You did?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Good, good." He goes, "How many pages?" I go, "It's 112 pages. Perfect." He goes, "It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. They're not going to read it. I just need it in front of me. What's the premise? What's the idea? It's a revenge, karate martial art revenge about this guy and on and on. Okay, got it." 2 hours later, he calls me. He goes, "I sold it."
What?
Yeah, he sold it. So we're going to do the picture. It'll probably be in a few months. So that's how that happened. And they never read the script.
Oh.
They hired a new writer. He wrote a whole new Train to Kill. But it just goes to show you that if you believe in yourself and you try, even if you do a lousy job, the universe might fix it up
right
to where it's going to work out.
Right.
Yeah, so that was funny. That was fun.
Did you get like an option for that original script? Or did they pay you a retainer or something like that? No.
It was just, "I'm going to be one of the leads in the picture."
Right.
So I was just like, "Hey, man, you can take that script and flush it down the toilet, burn it."
Right.
Did you direct the fight scenes or did you have anything involved with?
Oh, the fight scenes? No, it was a collaboration. The guys I worked with, they basically directed.
Okay.
Yeah. And we collaborated. I don't remember what parts, you know, that I might have thrown in something, but it was my trouble. Anybody watching, I wonder if they might have the same problem I had, was that I held back a lot and I was afraid. I didn't feel worthy to say, "Okay, why don't we try it this way and do it?" That's why when he said be director, I loved it because it gave me complete, you know, strength.
Right. Yeah. Awesome.
I felt like I can't tell these people, you know, even if it has to be involve me, I felt just do the best I can with whatever they tell me to do. And so through the process now, through my inner learning, I learned that listen to other people, but it doesn't mean I have to agree and do what I feel not comfortable with. And so now it's a lot different where it's 50-50. I love working with people, but one of the best parts about it is I'm not afraid to speak my piece. And I don't have to do it in a temper. That's people who hold it back.
Right.
And 5 days later, all of a sudden they're going nuts. You go, what the hell's there? But you just say it.
Yeah.
You just do it firmly and nicely. And you work together. That's what communicating is about. And I thought, if I have a different idea, it doesn't mean they're going to go, "Who do you think you are?" You know?
Right.
So that's very important to have that in life if you want to accomplish anything and if you want to be yourself.
Yeah.
And you know yourself better than anybody.
Right.
So if I'm directing you, I say, "Try it this way," but you don't feel comfortable with it. You search your way that you feel comfortable with that doesn't deviate from the motive that they want. Doesn't go away from it. It has the same thing. And the director looks at it and goes, "That's it." They're just looking for you to be you.
Yeah.
You know? So if he wants this, that, just, I always remember that they don't mean do that.
Right.
Listen to what they're saying, not what they're doing.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I had a feeling when you agreed to be on the show, I was like, there's going to be a lot to dig into in this conversation that we're having.
We have a segment on our show called $2, Six Questions, and it is from questions from listeners of the show. I was going to start with David Ullman. He's a friend of the show. He asked, was there any competition among martial artists during the filming of Last Dragon that was like playful or otherwise?
Yes. Yes. I don't want to name names.
You don't need to.
But
Schmerny Bays Bunyer, did it rhyme with it?
Schmucko. Yeah, somebody had approached me and said, you know, he's going to have a matchup with this person sparring. We can match you up with that person. You can fight with him. And I was just thinking, what are these guys talking about? You know? And so I won't say any names, but I'm just saying at times when you're dealing with action pictures, martial art pictures, and you have real martial artists in there, there's that ego.
Right.
And I was surprised because I don't care how good of a fighter or teacher a person is, when they show such a childlike ego to be king of the hill, it puts them down quite a few pegs.
Right.
And I was just like, God damn, I ain't going to match up with nobody. I came here to do a fucking movie.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. You know, I don't want to fight anybody here. These are all, I respect everybody. I don't like fighting anyway. But I thought it was ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah.
But that's, sometimes you get hit with that and you just go, fuck. But I'm glad to say, you know, for myself that, you know, I've never had that.
That's good.
When I was 14 years old, I was mad at my sister. So mad. I was yelling and yelling. I almost blacked out. And her boyfriend was really strong.
Barry Gordy.
He put you right in his movie. He was so strong.
Sorry.
How did you know? You've read my book.
You're right.
No, her boyfriend was pretty strong, and he just socked me, man.
Oh.
Boom! Knocked me out.
That's not cool.
Damn.
No, I had it coming. I had it coming, man. And I should say really quick that we were challenging each other. He said,
okay.
He said something like, oh, shut up. I said, you want to step outside? He goes, no, because then you start kicking.
No, I just want to hit you.
Let's do it right here.
I'll just punch you right now.
So I said, well, let me tell you something. And boom. So we already had a little budding going on. And bam. So anyways, I got knocked out. When I woke up, he was sitting on the chair. My sister was gone.
It was 10 years later. And you.
It felt like.
Yeah.
Sure. You know what? I woke up. I said, what happened? He said, I knocked you out. I said, you knocked me out. And I was so happy because I got knocked out and I'm still alive.
Hey.
Yeah, I felt it was nothing. In other words, I didn't fear it anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fear of being knocked out, I mean? Was gone.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, what's up? Boom.
Yeah.
I got up. I said, hey, it felt great because I was no longer upset. It's like one of those, I need it. Thanks. I need it.
Yeah.
Right.
So he was stumped. He was just like, I shook his hand, like, going, okay. He thought I was fine, you know. I go, thank you, man. Thanks so much.
If you marry my sister, you have my blessing.
But you see, that's, and whenever I sparred, I never sparred afraid to lose. Mm. Because I didn't think I was gonna win.
Right.
No, that's funny.
I didn't think I was gonna lose, but I didn't think anything. I just loved to spar. Mm. So the guy would spar with me. I'd be like, okay, let's go. And I noticed everybody I'd spar with, they'd be like this. Yeah. to be coming, you know. And I'm just going, and I'm going, babe. So bam, 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 bam. Once I start going, there's this, and I'm not afraid, because if they knock me out, what I, you know, I've had it. So right. I've experienced it. And but people's desire to win brought out their fear to lose. So I would get, I'd see it in their eyes. All of a sudden, they're not the same. It'd take away confidence. And so that's the thing that I don't like to fight. I enjoyed sparring. But the thing about it was you had gloves, so that was safe. And it was a sport, so nobody's going to go, okay, I'm going to kill you afterwards, right?
Right.
It was a sport. So I was completely fine with win or lose. The thing that scared me was the next day, what if they drive by and they shoot you or whatever, right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And so I was just like, oh, great. So I realized, hey, I'm a pretty good boxer. I was doing pretty good. And I fought a tough guy who knocked the wind out of me, but that's because I wasn't in shape. But I wasn't too bad. So I, like Danny Ansano said, the suit that fits for you.
Right.
Martial arts didn't fit for me. I can do it for fun. But in a fight, I wasn't practiced for it, and I didn't love it. But when it came to boxing, man, right when I put on, right when we spar, it was a joy. It was a joy, because you know what I mean? It's like you don't stand there and go, we're going to fight, we're going to fight, we're going to fight. What are you going to do about it? No, you put on the gloves, how you doing? Go. And you start going, man. Bam, bam. And always respect with both fighters. I feel respect to him.
Yeah.
You know, you're helping each other learn, you know? So when I saw it in that sense, oh, I loved it. And I love Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard. The first fight, remember that?
Those guys could go at it. I mean, what we have now is a whole other story, but back in the day.
Oh, boy, Sugar Ray Leonard. I remember that. I was working at a place and I said, I didn't know who Duran was. I said, Sugar Ray Leonard's unbeatable. That guy, how can you beat him?
Right.
Great, man. Fast, strong. And I saw a picture of Duran on the cover. I said, what's the big deal?
Right.
Looks like any other fighter, right? He can't beat Leonard. And then a couple of weeks before the fight, I saw on Wide World of Sports an interview with Duran. And they showed, you know, about 4 seconds of him boxing as a lightweight.
Yeah.
That's the first time I saw him. And all I saw was this. And here's Roberto Duran. I just like that. And I said, my God, Leonard's in trouble. Yeah. I just saw how he looked, how he moved. He had the same magical quality that all great fighters had. There's nobody else that fights like him.
Right.
They got their own style, their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And so Roberto, man, gosh, him and Sugar Ray Leonard are just two of the most entertaining boxers I've ever seen. Sonny Liston. But that guy, Sonny Liston, he's getting respect now. Very intelligent. He loved children. I'll tell you, somebody who loves children, they can't be bad.
No, come on.
They can't be bad, man.
Well, Jared from Subway would disagree.
Oh, anyway, God.
Hey, we got another question.
Question number two.
Give Me Back My Action Movies. Our good friends from Give Me Back My Action Movies. It's an excellent action podcast. Everybody should give them a follow. We're wondering, last dragon question, how many times or takes did you have to get locked in the locker and then jump out? How many times were you doing that?
Oh, not much at all. We got that down pretty quick.
Oh, okay.
Very nice.
It is great, because, you know, it's just like, we've already missed the second show. Like, you just, like, you know, you're just kicking it out. And it seemed like you were having a lot of fun with it. Just kicking open the door. And
that's imitating my friend again.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, Erin Gilmer, friend of the show, she has a podcast called Manic Movie Monday Podcast. She wants to know, what's the most romantic thing you have ever done? What's the most romantic thing you have ever done?
Oh my God. I'm trying to see if there is one romantic thing I've ever done.
Oh, come on now.
Is there some... romantic. Oh my God. You know, I wish I could say, well, I had bought a bouquet of beautiful flowers and chocolates and shit. I'm dull when it comes to romance.
What's the most romantic thing Barry Gordy ever did for your sister? I'm joking, but not really.
They got married.
Oh,
did they?
Yeah.
Oh. And then he put you in the movie. That's pretty romantic.
No, this was afterwards. This was after.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty romantic thing to do. Hey, I'll put your brother in a movie.
And then once that she asked him if I can be in another movie, they got divorced. Wait
oh.
a minute. No.
Oh.
Hey.
he's been married at least three times, right? I mean.
Yeah. They're not married anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
But thank you for that question. I wish I had a...
It's a hard question, I think.
It is, man. Because, you know, I mean, I fell in love a few times. I had a wonderful relationship with a girlfriend and we did a lot of things, but I don't have a story like a lot of guys do that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard because it's like, it's ego based question. It's not like, what is the most romantic thing somebody else did for you?
Yeah.
Which would be your own opinion about something. It's like, well, you know, I'm so romantic. I did this and this and this. It's just, that's how I feel when I hear that question. So I
feel like a schmuck if I say, well, I...
Right. I did this. It's the same thing you're talking about with your acting where you're very self-deprecating, but we know that you can act really well. And and whatever your experience was, going back to, you know, your own experience and the ineffableness of like being able to describe something, it's like, the way you come across on film is not how you were feeling, clearly, like you were feeling, I don't belong here, but that's not what we see. That's right. Not what the camera sees. So that's the bottom line. So it's like when you're feeling inauthentic about something, it's how you're perceiving yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a lot of times, how many times a friend says, or your girl says, that was so sweet.
Right.
And you realize it.
Like, right.
Like oh yeah. You know?
No, so it wasn't.
Hopefully I've done a few of those things I didn't recognize.
I'm gonna answer Aaron's question by saying the most romantic thing Glenn has ever done was come on our show and talk about that. So there you go.
You know, I was gonna say that, but I didn't want to embarrass you.
It is very romantic.
Let me see. I'll get the flowers. Wait a minute.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's just all like, I got a skywriter to say, like, I love you, I guess. Yeah,
who's that
could
guy?
Be yeah. Romantic, but also could be really lame. So I don't, you know, and I've done nothing with skywriting.
I can say this for sure. I know I've done a lot of dumb things.
Yeah. Hey.
Right. But they didn't start out that way, right? The intention was not dumb, probably.
No, you live and you learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Did it involve you giving away all your money to somebody you met at McDonald's? One day?
Luckily, that was a moment, only one moment in my life.
Oh, okay, God. That's good.
Thank God.
That's good. That really was.
I've held on to my money since then.
Good. That's excellent. So question number four is from Angie Lossner, who was curious if you physically took anything from the movie after you were done.
Last Dragon.
The Last Dragon, after you you know, like a shirt, wardrobe.
Jacket. I took the jacket. It was a jacket that everybody was wearing, the black jacket, and it had the Last Dragon in the back.
Oh, cool.
And really quickly, that was Barry said, can you draw something like a poster? So I did that. It was three Timoks, like in cartoon figure, and one's kicking, the other one's flying, kicking, and the other one's, the last one is getting smashed by the N on the word dragon. So you have the last dragon, you have doom doom, and the last one is getting smashed.
Oh, cool.
But I drove that down, and he goes, "Oh, pretty nice." And they didn't use it for the poster, though. They had a much better poster, but they used it for the jackets for the crew and everybody.
Oh, okay, like the wrap gift.
Yeah. So I got one of those jackets.
Nice.
But that was it. Just the jacket.
Do you still have that drawing that you made?
No, it was a cheap drawing. You know, I mean, I just, you know, it was all right, like a cartoon. But that shows you my confidence. Barry said, yeah, we can, if they use this as the poster, you're going to make a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah.
But my mentality was, they're not going to use that as a poster.
Right.
And if they did, I'd feel bad taking money because it took me about 10 minutes to draw it on the piece.
Doesn't matter.
See, I was not one to take advantage. I just, oh, it's okay. Yeah.
No, I share that. I share that mindset with things. You know, I'm making a children's book and my wife's like, you should illustrate it. You're a good illustrator. I'm like, no, I'm not. She's like, I'll probably hire somebody. And she's like, why? You're the one who should be drawing, because I draw these notes for my son every day, school notes. They're pretty over the top. And she's like, no, you should be the one to be drawing these. I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah, it kind of defeats the purpose if you hire someone. And it's just dumb.
I know.
This is a stupid book. But it is.
It's that dumb. It's that dumb mentality of like, I should just hire someone to do this. You know, yeah. Anyways,
no. Just hire someone to write it. Hire someone to write it and draw it.
Hire somebody to do.
And you just describe what.
Hire
what
someone to be me.
The visuals.
Yeah.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, really quickly about your drawing. Yeah, no. The nice thing about you drawing it too is that it'll have your character and personality.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's probably why she said, like, no, they can't capture what you can capture.
Yeah. And I have a unique style. So, right. Yeah.
Well, it's like, I mean, Glenn, he's really sort of short selling this, because Zach has written over 1,200 notes for his son. And every day, you know, there's a note and an epic drawing and a story and this whole thing. So there's 1,200 pieces of art. It seems very strange to kind of invest, you know, 7 years of your life and then be like, oh, I'm going to make it into a book, but I'm going to have someone else do it. Like, makes no sense. Your wife is right. And Glenn is right.
This is an example. I don't know if you can see it, but this is like Miami Vice.
Oh yeah.
Crockett and Tubbs.
The character.
Yeah.
Anyways,
that's
an idea.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's a little thing you do, but it goes a long way. You know, so
it does. It's, you know, it's all about having confidence in yourself.
Right.
You know, and it's a. It's not like the Olympics that if you can jump only seven feet and the guy can jump and you can't beat him.
Right.
But life is not the Olympics. It's not a sport in the event.
Right.
So it's not like, oh, this is, I've seen better drawers. I've seen better writers, or I've seen better actors. I've seen better. It's not about that.
No.
It's about, there's nobody who is like you. That's all.
I love that, man. I love that. I love that you brought that to this discussion too, you know. So
thank you.
Beautiful thing. We got a question from Ronnie Raimondo. Ronnie Raimondo is a fan of Train to Kill. He loves that movie, and I do too. But he's wondering if you he's wondering if you had ever seen the movie Breathing Fire. That came out a few years later with Key. How do you say his name, Dustin? Again, sorry.
Key. Oh man, Ki-Hai Kwan.
Ki-Hai Kwan. Yeah.
Ki-Hai Kwan from you know, Data and the Goonies, and he just won the Oscar for Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Okay. Yeah. So Breathing Fire, similar premise, but it's not Train to Kill. That's for sure.
No, you can't. You can't touch Train to Kill. You can burn it, but you can't touch it.
Yeah, you can set it on fire.
Oh yeah,
but don't touch it.
Please,
please.
That's funny. Hey, you should go check it out, I guess. I haven't, I'm not familiar with it either.
You're going to watch it with me, Dustin. You're going to watch
it. Breathing fire. Our last question comes from Zach's mommy.
My mom.
Zach's mommy, Carol McKee, our number one patron. Hello, Carol. We love you. She'd like to know what music motivates you.
Rocky, original Rocky music. Gonna fly now, go in the distance.
Yes.
I like a lot of the beat rap music to make me train, like what's that? A lot of them, my God. The ones with a nice song, you know. I think you get the four time Atkinson. I forgot. No time turned down for what?
Oh yeah! Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Down, nice, nice, nice. Oh,
training. And of course, I like to listen to a lot of all kinds of music. U2, Streets with No Name, Beatles. God, so many of
That's
different.
That's great. Genres. I love it. I love
Laura
it.
Laura Charles. Yeah, Seventh Lord. Heaven.
Not Seventh Heaven.
Last
Not
Dragon Seventh. Soundtrack. Yeah.
No.
And is there anything you'd like to promote, and how can people find you?
I'm in San Miguel, Mexico right now, and I'm doing a comedy show here in a couple of months at the Don Lupe's cafe down the street. You can see, I guess, pull up Glenn Eaton and see some of my stuff that I did. I put on YouTube, so you can check that out. And
love it.
If you have the patience to deal with it.
Yeah,
are you a stand-up comic?
No.
No. So what kind of comedy show is it?
It's comedy scenes, skits.
Okay. Oh, great. Cool.
Excellent.
I got to tell you, Glenn, this was exceeded my expectations for what we were going to have a conversation with you about. This is really fantastic. We every March we do a tribute to martial art movies, right? We call it Martial Art Madness, and we celebrate the movies from the 80s, martial art movies from the 80s and 90s we love, and then we interview someone connected to one of the movies. Obviously, we're covering Last Dragon. But having you on is really meaningful. And I think my takeaway from this is an immense amount of gratitude to have you on the show. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure. I thank you for having me and the kind words. And look forward to hopefully meeting you in the future and doing another show.
Hi, Duke. Oh, listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four...
Is it a five-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a five-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.